Yes, said Alex. London, Penny Feather?
London Penny Feather, said the lady evenly, as if weighing the words.
Alex gave her a wide, defensive smile.
I'm sorry, said the woman. I don't think so.
She turned on the heel of her stylishly functional leather boot and disappeared back into the little stone building. Come back tomorrow, she called a moment before the door slammed behind her. Wren looked from the freshly closed door to the still closed gate, then at Alex.
London Penny Feather? She said.
Alex looked down sheepishly.
Yeah,
he managed. Good old Great Uncle Pennyfeather. Wren chuckled, and Alex just shook his head ruefully. It felt good to share a joke again. But then the smile fell from Alex's face, and the determined set of his jaw returned. The change was too sudden for Wren to match, and the smile was still stranded on her face as Alex reached into his shirt and removed his amulet.
I can get us in, he said.
Chapter 12 Egyptian Avenue. Alex was expecting a click, but instead he got a clunk. It wasn't the first lock he'd opened with his amulet, but it was definitely the largest, and the oldest by a solid century.
Ready?
He said, looking back to find Wren stuffing her folder back in her messenger bag. She nodded. Study time was over. It was time for the test. Alex released his amulet and gave the big gate a push. Gate. Creak! Door. Thunk! Lady. Stop right now! Alex and Wren made a break for it. Their feet slapped loudly on the stone tiles of the courtyard, and Wren's folder fell out of her bag.
Oh, no, she blurted.
Alex turned and saw loose paper spilling across the stone, and the woman closing in on Wren. Come on, he called. It's just printouts. Wren resumed running, and she and Alex quickly pulled away. They reached the edge of the courtyard, and Alex felt a sense of crazy elation as he took the old stone steps two at a time. For 12 years, he'd been the sick kid, the frail kid. He couldn't remember the last time he made it through a full gym class. And now? He felt the wind push his hair back as he ran. For all it cost, he thought, coming back from the dead definitely has its benefits. He imagined his mom, alone with him in that hospital room, reciting the spell that gave him this new life. The last thing she did for me. He shook his head hard on the fly. Old graves sprouted on either side of a central path, large stone monuments with moss climbing the sides and lichen clinging to the tops. Death and decay and life all at once. This way, Alex called to Wren, a few feet back. They switched directions without breaking stride and headed down a muddy side path. Carefully planted trees had gone rogue over the years and now sprang up all around them. 20 yards in, they stopped.
Think we lost her, he said, huffing and puffing. We lost her,
Wren began, pausing for a gulp of air. 30 feet after we found her. Another huff. She didn't make it out of the courtyard. They grabbed a few more lungfuls and then straightened up and started walking.
I can't believe I dropped my folder, said Wren, grimacing.
Just printouts of news stories and stuff, said Alex. And he was mostly right, except for the letter at the end. The one on Dr. Aditi's official museum letterhead.
Anyway, said Wren, I think I remember where the first disturbance was.
They walked on, looking at the elaborate sculptures on the graves, angels, crosses, and more surprising shapes. Many of the monuments listed the occupations and even the addresses of the deceased. Others provided clues to their lives.
I'll bet that was his pet,
said Wren, pointing to a sad stone dog curled up at the base of a tombstone.
Bet he was a carriage driver, said Alex, pointing to a large stone carriage on top of another. It reminds me of Egypt.
Because of the, like, coffin-y things? Said Wren,
nodding at the nearest one. The bodies here weren't buried. They were interred in stone boxes above ground. Alex looked at one. The resemblance to an Egyptian sarcophagus was unmistakable. Yeah, and just, I don't know, the idea that you can take it with you. He pointed back at the stone dog. That guy's kind of like your new friend, you know? That little cat gave me the creeps, said Wren, but with a small smile on her face. Then she stopped and pointed up the path. There's the first one. The torn remains of blue and white police tape flapped idly in the breeze, a dead giveaway. They walked over slowly. Orvath Bridgers, said Alex, reading the raised letters on the large stone box. Sounds like two clothing companies got married. The top of the monument had been lifted back into place, but Alex eyed the fresh cement filling the jagged line that ran down its center. Hundreds of pounds, but it had been knocked off and shattered like a plate to get at what was inside. Or who was? It says Orvath was a goldsmith, said Wren. Alex read the line, "Goldsmith to the rich and royal," and sized up the expensive monument. If you thought you could take it with you, he said, what would a famous goldsmith take? They headed up the hill toward the next grave, Wren leading the way and both of them turning this new puzzle piece over in their minds. They robbed graves in ancient Egypt, too, said Wren. Yeah, but if they caught you back then, they cut off your hand. Gross, said Wren. But then she had another thought. It's like the crown jewels. The gold, I mean. It's fancy, just like with... The Stung Man, said Alex, remembering, like how he decorated his tomb with stolen loot. Nice things. Yeah, but it's more than nice things this time, said Wren. This is treasure. Alex nodded. Treasure stolen from a grave. Let's check out the next one. They continued up the slope and turned a gentle corner on the path. Here it is, said Wren. And you thought this place reminded you of Egypt before. Alex couldn't believe what he was seeing. Not how strange it was, but how familiar. A massive stone archway towered above them, with columns carved on either side. It may be balanced on an English hillside, thought Alex, but the style is all Nile. They call it Egyptian Avenue, said Wren, earning her extra credit. Alex could see why immediately. It's a tomb front, he said, noticing the carved lotus flowers. I mean, you could plop this thing down in the Egyptian wing at the Met, and no one would look twice. The size, the style, the columns, everything. Not everything, said Wren, pointing at the twin rows of shadowy doorways that lay beyond the archway. These tombs are above ground. They ventured slowly under the archway and into the avenue. The linked crypts loomed on either side of them, their worn stone facades speckled with moss and age, their heavy doors painted black as night. I don't know, said Wren, falling a few steps behind. Maybe we should come back with Dr. Aditi. What good would that do? Said Alex dismissively. She doesn't even have an amulet. Neither do I, Wren said under her breath. But Alex was already talking again. Here it is, he said. In front of him, one of the black doors hung open, half off its hinges. He scanned the facade. There's no name on this one. No, nothing, he said. Did the article say who it was? Wren mumbled her response, her eyes fixed on the darkness within. No, said the records burned up in World War II. That's weird, said Alex, taking another step forward and craning his neck to look inside. The thin slice of gray light coming through the broken door revealed three large ceramic jars. Alex had seen ones just like them at the Met, but even in Egyptian Avenue, this seemed too much. Are those canopic? Said Wren, standing a little farther back. Alex shook his head. These weren't the small ceremonial jars that held the internal organs of the deceased. These were larger, more functional. "These hold provisions," he said, "for the afterlife. Food, drinks, grain maybe." He was so engrossed that he didn't feel his amulet getting warmer against his already warm chest.
"Know a lot, boy,"
he heard. At least, he thought that's what it was. The voice was so thick and scratchy and raw that it was hard to tell for sure. The friend spun toward the voice, Alex already preparing his excuses. "My great uncle, a class project." But it wasn't a volunteer they saw. No groundskeeper or gardener. Alex's blood turned to ice water, and his breath caught in his throat. The man they were looking at seemed to stand nearly as high as the columns. His jaw was square, and his chest was wide, and everything about him was wrong, an abomination. His outfit, once tan by the looks of it, was now stained with thick streaks of dirt and mud. The gaudy gold jewelry encircling his neck and one wrist was tarnished by time and death. The man's skin was mottled and uneven, in some places it was stretched taut and dry, like a mummy's, and in others it hung loose like a pale old man's. The jagged breath slipping from his mouth spoke of damage inside, and yet, the dead man stood in broad daylight, smiling at them with time-yellowed teeth. Alex knew immediately that it wasn't a friendly look. It was a hungry one. Alex reached up for his amulet, still resting lightly outside his shirt. The thing followed the movement and caught a glimpse before Alex's hand wrapped around it.
"A scarab,"
he rasped, barely intelligible. Alex hardly heard it anyway, all his attention drawn to the creature's eyes. They were like reverse stars, dots of pure black hovering in the soft gray afternoon light. He immediately, instinctively knew the truth. He'd seen that black light before. These eyes were windows into the afterlife. He looked inside, transfixed. "Deathwalker," he said, his lips forming the words almost despite him. The walker smiled wider.
"Yes,"
he hissed. "Alex," called Wren from behind him. "Let's go." The smile vanished, and the deathwalker paced forward, heavy old boots thudding into the soft ground. One step, two steps, a few more, and he would be close enough to grab Alex's amulet, or throat. But Alex was pretty fast himself these days. With a move he'd practiced 100 times back home, and 100 more in the park at night, his left hand squeezed the scarab as his right hand shot up. A powerful phantom wind rose up. The wind that comes before the rain. A force of seasonal rebirth in Egypt. The gusts staggered this walker as they had the last one. It wasn't enough to stop him, but it was enough to slow him and knock him off balance. Alex pulled his hand back, allowing the creature to stumble into the sudden lack of resistance. The walker spat out 6 ill-formed words. The only ones Alex caught were,
"Crush you."
Wren grabbed Alex's shoulder. "Come on!" Alex shook her off, and his hand shot up a second time. Instead of spreading his fingers wide, he pointed them tightly. It was a move born of desperation and anger, but it worked. What shot forth was not a wall of wind, but a spear of it. The force struck the walker on his left shoulder, and he spun back, falling to one knee. In the few moments it took the walker to get to his feet, Alex and Wren scrambled down the row of crypts and back onto the path. But just as Wren turned to sprint down the slope, Alex skidded to a stop. The walker appeared under the arch. "Alex!" Wren yelled. But Alex didn't move, and once again, Wren reluctantly stood by her friend. The towering walker glared at him, and Alex glared right back. "Tell me where my mom is!" he shouted. The walker responded to the pain in the boy's voice with a desolate and broken wheeze. A laugh like a smoker's cough. Alex screamed back. No words, just a howl of frustration. His hand shot out, the fingers pointed again. The spear of wind whistled straight toward the walker's head. The creature opened his mouth wide and ate it. The wind disappeared into a howling vacuum inside. As Alex watched, the mouth opened wider, wider, too wide, and it blackened. Alex felt a sudden chill shoot through him, and then he felt something else. A tearing pain seemed to come from his whole body at once. He felt as if he was being unzipped from head to toe, unzipped! He heard a scream and turned toward its source. Wren. Just a few steps away, she was caught in the same attack. For a moment, he saw her standing there, leaning back with her heels dug in to resist the wind pulling her toward the horrible, distended mouth. And then he saw a flicker and a blur as a mirror image of his best friend slowly began to pull away from her body. Her soul, he realized in horror. He looked down and saw the same thing happening to him, but not in the same way. Instead of the vibrant colors peeling free from Wren's small frame, he saw a gray and misty tinge to his. It felt like losing hope, like that poisoned gut moment between dropping something precious and seeing it shatter. It felt like that, if the thing you dropped was your life, and all you'd ever loved. In that awful moment of misery, he knew he had to act, not just for himself, but also for his friend. He could see a full second image of her head now, bending away from her body and toward the walker. Not much time. He felt nearly hollow inside. He was so cold now, almost frozen. His hand was still wrapped tightly around the scarab, his head still pounding with the effort, but his right hand could no longer do anything but point toward the powerful vacuum pulling it forward. Alex reached up with the only thing he could still control. His eyes. He flicked them up, scanning the air above the path. He found what he was looking for. He locked on. Then, with all the strength and will he had left, he jerked his entire head down in one sharp nod. The branch he'd been staring at came down with it. Crack! The walker looked up in surprise, pointing his open mouth at the falling branch. Instantly, a shadow image of brown wood and green leaves tore free and disappeared down his gaping maw. A moment later, the branch crashed down on his oversized frame, knocking the foul man-thing to the ground. Free. Alex could feel it, instantly. He gasped deeply, and heard Wren doing the same next to him. He knew it wasn't just air returning to their bodies. This time, he was the one to yell it. Run! They sprinted headlong down the hill. He'd been wrong to try to force this fight. He'd used the amulet to banish the first Deathwalker back to the afterlife, and he knew that, somehow, he would need to do the same with this one. It was why they were in London. But he also knew he needed more. The Book of the Dead. The right spell. The right moment. And this was not it. They needed to regroup. To plan. They needed to escape. A loud noise echoed behind them, the sound of splintering wood, and they ran faster. He could feel his churning legs pumping heat back into his chilled body. As they descended the hillside, the gatehouse came into view. From the vantage point of the hillside, he spied something he'd missed before. A smaller side gate. It seemed a better bet than the big main gate, and he didn't want to lead that thing back to the white-haired lady. They reached the side gate together and slammed into it, pulling it shut behind them and sprinting straight down Swain's Lane. They blew past the home of the two missing teens and didn't stop until they'd reached the small cluster of houses and shops at the bottom. Sidewalk passers-by stared at them, but Alex was too worried about Wren to notice. Finally, she turned to him. Her first words were forced, squeezed out through big, greedy breaths.
He must have been there to rob another grave.
Alex nodded, relieved to hear her voice again. They took a few more looks behind them, then found a bench and plopped down, collecting themselves. Alex looked up and found the sun, its cottony white outline just visible behind a bank of late-day clouds. Wren did the same thing. The warmth felt good. Alex took out his cell phone to call Aditi, but the battery was completely drained, dead as a rock. He didn't have to wonder why, or ask Wren if hers was too. The two sat side by side and pointed their faces at the sky, their eyes closed against the pale sun, their lips purple from the cold. Chapter 13. Slipping Away. Dr. Aditi nodded politely as the cemetery lady let her have it.
Yes, well, we have interns here, too, but ours know their place.
I'm sorry, said Aditi. I can assure you it won't happen again.
Yes, well, I should hope it doesn't.
Aditi played her best card.
They are Americans. Spirited, but...
That's one word for it, I suppose, said the lady.
She seemed to consider something, and then let it go.
Yes. Yes, they certainly were spirited and resourceful. I have no idea how they got that lock open.
I think they teach that in the schools over there, said Aditi.
The lady shook her head lightly and let her frown slip away.
Yanks, said Aditi,
and the two shared a playful, conspiratorial smile. The lady handed her the letter Ren had dropped. The number she'd used to call her circled in blue pen at the top.
Yours, I believe.
Thank you, Aditi said, taking the list of emergency contact numbers. Let me know if the museum can do anything for you here.
Always looking for funds.
Another shared smile. Then the gatekeeper headed back to her post, and Aditi headed up the hillside. She sighed heavily as she topped the stone stairs at the edge of the courtyard and saw the slightly muddy main path. She was wearing entirely the wrong shoes for this.
Alex! Ren! She called. Come along, please. I'm not sure it's quite safe here.
She paused to look up the path and then cast a quick, nervous glance over her shoulder. She checked her phone. Still no response to her calls and texts. She pocketed it and began to trudge upward. Toadmon had warned her about the kid's initiative, as he called it. He seemed to think it was a good thing. She wasn't so sure.
Alex, she called. Ren!
No answer. She took a deep breath, steadied herself, and then continued on. She turned a gentle corner and saw a dead tree branch split in two and lying in the middle of the walking path. Strange, she thought. The rest of the ground seemed well maintained. She looked up to make sure another branch wasn't about to fall, but heard heavy footsteps behind her.
Alex, she said, turning.
Her voice trailed away. The response came in a ragged rasp.
Hello, love.
Two strong hands clamped down on her shoulders. She tried to shake free. She struggled hard and did everything right. Two hands on one wrist, find the weak point. It didn't matter. His grip was like stone. Broken sounds spilled from the thing's lips, and this time Aditi caught only one word.
Hungry.
The tussle with the amulet keeper had taken something out of him. He needed to feed. Aditi glared up at the man. He was disfigured by both death and afterlife, but she recognized him just the same.
I know you, she said,
and then spat in his face. If he reaches up to wipe it away, she thought, maybe I can slip free. He didn't. His powerful hands dug into her shoulders as he opened his mouth wide and showed her oblivion. The world went cold, and the last thing she saw as her eyes turned white and her lips edged past purple was her very self slipping away. Alex's head was throbbing as they rode the train back to the Campbell. Using the amulet had always left him with headaches, and they seemed to be getting worse the better he got with the thing. He turned things over in his aching head as best he could. One grave robbed of gold, another containing Egyptian jars, and a deathwalker in...
What?
Exactly. He wasn't entirely sure what was under all that filth, but he thought it might be...
khaki?
He pictured the man's face, damaged, but pale, replayed his words, ragged and torn, but English. But how could a Deathwalker, revived by the lost spells of ancient Egypt, be English? He turned his tender head toward Wren. If anyone could piece this together, but he could see right away that she wasn't up for a debriefing. Shivering slightly in the seat next to him, she looked small and fragile. She saw him looking.
I feel so hollow, she said.
She opened her mouth to clarify, but couldn't find the words. She gazed down at the train floor, as if she might have dropped them there. All Alex could do was nod. He knew exactly what she meant. He knew the ache in her heart and the dog-just-died feeling in her gut. He knew it well. His soul had slipped away before, after all. They rode on in heavy silence. By the time they reached the Campbell Collection, his headache was a full-blown migraine. Summers was behind the front desk, and he had a single message to relay.
A DT is looking for you. You are both in trouble.
They knew that already. There was a Deathwalker in town. The two slunk upstairs, past a handful of late-day browsers. Alex rifled through his stuff for his bottle of headache pills, took two too many, and collapsed onto his bed. The pressure inside his skull was unbearable. He edged toward unconsciousness and hoped for it. Wren called through the wall, something about messages. She'd plugged in her phone. Alex didn't answer. He'd begun the day in a dark mood. He would end it in darkness. Chapter 14. Fight. Alex slept straight through the evening and through most of the night, too. But after loading up at the drinking fountain before bed, he woke up with a pressing need around 4 a.m. All that remained of his headache was a fuzzy, unfocused feeling and a dull ache in one temple. His main problem now? The museum's restrooms were all the way down on the second floor. He eyed the chamber pot on his way out of the room, but he still had his pride. He stumbled blearily down the dark stairwell. He couldn't tell if his amulet felt a little hot as he passed the third floor, or if he'd just been sleeping on it again. He reached his destination and pushed through the men's room door. He looked like death in the mirror under the fluorescent lights. Flush with success, he headed back up the stairs. But he was more awake now, and the amulet did feel hot. Halfway up the last flight of stairs, the hairs on the back of his neck stood up. He wasn't alone. Had they been followed? A noise behind him. He fumbled for his amulet and swung around, nearly falling, but it was too late. The cat had already brushed past him, tattered linen against flannel pajama. The little mummy looked back ever so slightly as she continued up the stairs, and Alex caught a glimpse of one glowing green eye. He clutched the railing and tried to catch his breath. Ah, you scared... you little... He saw her again a few minutes later, already curled up outside Wren's door. Is she asleep? He wondered as he carefully stepped over her. Hasn't she been doing that for, like, 4,000 years? He closed his door, mildly creeped out, but reassured by the thing's utter lack of interest in him. A door to the afterlife had opened when his mom used the lost spells. He was just glad that not everything that slipped out was trying to kill him. He fell back to sleep and woke up again a little after 6 a.m. He unplugged his phone and saw all the missed calls and unanswered texts Aditi had left the day before, laced with ones from Luke. They both wanted to know where he was. It was too early to call Aditi back, but he bit the bullet and answered the last of her texts. He sat up and looked out the window. His head felt clear, the tenderness gone. He turned and looked at the mint-green wall. Wren was on the other side. His stone-cold amulet told him that the mummy cat had faded along with the darkness. He wanted to wake Wren up and get an early start on things. The way he saw it, They'd already wasted an entire night. But nothing would be open yet, and he had a vague sense that maybe he hadn't been the greatest to her yesterday. He lowered his head to his pillow and let her sleep. He passed the time turning over the new information they'd gained at the cemetery. By the time he heard a faint stirring through the wall, it was almost 9. His patience had run out, and he was once again anxious to get started. Plus, it was almost time for Dr. Aditi to pick them up. But the sound faded quickly. He raised his hand, hesitated for just a moment, and knocked. Come on, he was thinking, we've got to get going. Yeah, yesterday was rough, but that was yesterday. No response. He knocked again. What? Called Ren. Alex heard the edge in her voice, but he pushed past it. This was too important. Time to get going, he called. Ren didn't answer, but he heard her thumping around loudly in her room. One shoe dropped, and then the other. He was already dressed, so he got up and walked toward his door. Meet you in the hallway, he said. He double-checked that the cat was gone, and then took up the same post outside her door. He had to wait for a while, but eventually the door opened. You look awful, he said. Thanks, said Ren. She ran a hand through her rumpled hair. But that wasn't the problem. Her eyes were glassy, her lips still a little too dark. I feel kinda drained, she admitted. So sleepy. We're already late. Ren's glassy eyes went wide. Dr. Aditi, she said. What time is it? Almost 9:30. The plan was for Aditi to pick them up a little before 9 each day, on her way to the museum. They rushed down to the curb, waving at Summers, who was looking a little sleep-rumpled himself. They pushed through the front doors and into the first truly, cloudlessly sunny day since their arrival. The light hurt Alex's eyes, and he blinked against it as he scanned the pavement. But the little lot was empty except for Summers's old green shoebox of a car. Not here, said Ren. We really are in trouble, said Alex. Ren could see Alex getting antsy again as they waited by the curb, scanning the street for familiar cars. He'd nearly gotten her killed, and all he'd had to say about it so far was, You look awful and you're late. Hey, he said. What did the walker's outfit look like to you?
His outfit?
Said Ren sleepily.
Yeah, like what material?
She closed her eyes and tried to remember an image she'd been trying to forget.
I don't know what material it was, she said finally, but it had buttons.
Yeah, said Alex loud enough to startle her. They didn't button their clothing in ancient Egypt.
You don't have to shout. We're the only ones here.
He looked at her blankly and continued.
So this one's not Egyptian, and not as old. Like, I don't know how old, but definitely in the button age.
Alex was talking fast, rolling over Ren's groggy mind.
He wasn't exactly young, she mumbled.
What? As out of it as she was, she still didn't want to sound stupid. She searched her sleepy brain for something smart.
But no one makes mummies anymore, she managed.
She could still picture the stung man rising from his ancient sarcophagus and later, once he'd replaced his wrappings with robes. Alex just shrugged. People aren't supposed to be filling English crypts with provisions for the afterlife either, he said. That must have been what he was there for, going back for seconds. But then something did occur to Ren. Something smart. She pictured the hand in the newspaper photo, covered in fresh linen.
If this walker was newer, maybe they... I mean, maybe someone is still... like...
She paused to piece the thought together, but Alex had run out of patience.
Where is she?
He blurted, turning to scan the road again. Ren exhaled loudly. She was annoyed at being cut off, but it was more than that. She still felt so tired. It wasn't that she hadn't gotten enough sleep. She'd basically passed out as soon as she hit the bed. It was something else.
She felt beaten up, hollowed out. "I think I..." she began.
But once again, Alex cut her off. "We're wasting time," he said. There was no question who would keep talking, so Ren led him. "We'll just do it on our own until we hear from her."
"Yeah, 'cause that worked so well yesterday," she said.
Alex rolled on. "She's mad at us. She's probably out searching right now."
Ren doubted that.
"She'll call soon," she said. "She left like a million messages yesterday. We just have to wait."
"We've waited too much already,"
Alex sputtered, a fleck of saliva making it all the way to Ren's cheek.
"What we need now is information. We need to find out who was in that tomb, for one. Really old info, the kind of stuff that won't be online. We need, like, a big library. Is there one in..."
"The British Library is one of the biggest in the world, Alex. How do you not know that?" Finally, he looked over. Really looked.
"What's your problem, Ren?" he said.
"What's my problem?" she said. "Where do I start? Did you even see what happened to us yesterday? What that thing did?"
"I saved you," he protested.
"Saved me? You dragged me there. You served me up."
"I was looking for information," he said.
"I thought you could appreciate that."
Ren felt the dam burst within her.
"Yeah, well, we got plenty of that. And we were free, gone. We were on the path, headed down, and you had to stop. Why? So stupid. Where's my mom?"
She imitated his voice, made it whiny.
"Really? You couldn't understand that thing if it told you."
For a moment, she saw the words hit home. Then his eyes narrowed into slits.
"I'm sorry if I'm not afraid to take chances," he spat. "I don't need to be perfect all the time. I don't need to know all the answers first."
"What are you..." she began. But she knew what he meant. Boy, did she. Alex smirked, as if he'd proven something, as if he'd won. "We need to get going," he said firmly.
"We need to wait for Dr. Aditi," said Ren.
Now she was the one shouting, "because your chances are going to get us killed, and you know what I need?" She looked up at the sunny sky, the first really nice day since they'd arrived.
"I need a break! From you, from this, from everything. I am tired, Alex."
"No," she corrected herself.
"I am drained."
Alex stared at her, bug-eyed.
"What do you want to..."
"I am going to go see the Rembrandts in the National Gallery. I've always wanted to do that." Rembrandt was Ren's favorite painter, an old master of dark, lush portraits.
"But you can see those at the Met," said Alex.
"No, I can't, because I am not in New York anymore, Alex. I'm in London, to help you. Not that you've noticed."
Alex looked away. "You're homesick," he said. "You're scared."
The disappointment in his voice stung Ren. And for just a brief, dark moment, she dug down deep in her mind, looking for something sharp to wound him with. "At least I have parents at home to miss," flashed up like a monster from the deep. But she didn't say it. She took a deep breath.
"I am going to the National Gallery to look at the paintings and wait for Dr. Aditi to call," she said.
She started down the sidewalk, pulling her guidebook from her messenger bag.
"Have fun at the library."
Chapter 15. Library Leads.
Fine, thought Alex. Fine. They could leave him alone, completely abandon him if they wanted. Ren could go to a freaking gallery, Aditi could cut him out of her search. He'd done this before.
He remembered the long spring days after he'd been pulled out of school, sitting in his mom's office while she worked and Ren was in school, picking at his homeschool work like eating cold oatmeal. And he remembered the days in the hospital before that, waiting for his mom, or anyone. So many days alone, and always waiting for someone. Not anymore, he told himself. Now it was his mom who was alone. Now she was waiting for him. At least he hoped and prayed that she was. He felt sure that she was alive. But how do I know? What if... Alex shook his head hard,
and his fast walk turned into almost a jog. Soon, the massive British Library loomed before him. He was stunned by its size, and a jolt of hope shot through him. Maybe the answers he needed were in there. He needed information on Egyptian Avenue. That seemed like a good place to start. But he knew what he was really looking for were potential Death Walkers, bad British dudes with some strong connection to Egypt. Inside, the building was cool and clean and absolutely massive. Alex took a quick breath and got to it. It reminded him of the days he used to tag along with his mom to the main branch of the New York Public Library. This one was much larger and infinitely more British, but it contained the same mix of serious scholars, stressed students, gawking tourists, and the occasional crazy. Some books he could pluck from the shelves himself, and some he had to ask for. An hour later, he was seated in a reading room on the third floor, in between the maps collection and Asian and African studies. He had a heavy stack of old books on his desk and a thin layer of sweat on his forehead. He began with Highgate. He needed to figure out who was in that tomb, why the Walker had robbed it in the first place, and why he'd go back. His eyes glazed like donuts as he hit plenty of history in two newer books, but no mention of an unmarked vault. He skeptically picked up a very old, wafer-thin volume called A Stroll Down Egyptian Avenue. The detailed description of the place sent a shiver through Alex. He remembered walking that same shadowy path and what had waited at the end. And then, as I walked on, I came upon the unnamed vault and spared a thought for the notorious archaeologist within. Alex held his breath. But the book's author spared only a thought, not a name. An archaeologist, thought Alex. He glanced at the heavy stack of books in front of him, sighed, and went to get a whole new stack. He knew more or less what he was looking for. A notorious British archaeologist who died between 1839, when Highgate opened, and 1904, when the old book was written. He still wished his mom was there to ask all the right questions at the information desk. My mom, he thought, or Wren. Chapter 16. A Brush with Danger. Wren's head swam as she took a seat in front of a large painting, the old canvas thick and dark with layers of oil paint. Though she'd never seen it before, the painting was immediately familiar to her. It was by Rembrandt van Rijn, the Dutch painter whose work filled her favorite room back home at the Met. She followed the patterns in the paint slowly, allowing the faces and shapes they formed to come to her as if emerging from a lake. She felt a knot loosen somewhere inside her. She could almost imagine she was back at the Met, waiting for her dad to finish work. Almost. But other images shouldered their way in. She reached a dark corner of the canvas, and instead of seeing the shadows of a long-ago room, she spied the open mouth of a monster. She shivered deep down, but didn't look away. She felt like she saw the impossible almost every day now. On a good day, it was a dead cat trying to get free. On a bad day, it was a dead man trying to suck out her soul. She felt like a visitor in her own world. Her facts, her lists. What good did they do when anything could be true? She pushed on, out of the corner of the canvas, and back up. She found a face, the little brush of color on the cheek, and ever so slightly, she smiled. And that's when she understood why she was there, in that room, instead of at the British Library. Yes, Alex was being selfish, but that wasn't it. She really was drained. And it wasn't her body that needed recharging. It wasn't her brain, either. She pulled her gaze back and took in the whole painting at once. It was beautiful. No, it was her soul. She didn't understand how that was possible, either, but she knew this. It had nearly been torn from her. And now it needed to heal.
Hey, Ren,
she heard as someone sat down next to her. She turned. Oh, hey, Luke, she said, not quite managing to keep the surprise out of her voice.
Hey,
he said,
sup?
Not much, said Ren, just checking out the paintings.
Right, said Luke, because it's a gallery. Me too.
Ren didn't want to be rude, but...
Really?
She said. Luke was dressed as if a basketball game might break out at any moment.
Doesn't really seem like your thing.
Oh, it's not, but the camp makes us,
he said.
We have to tackle cultural tasks. It's supposed to increase our mental sharpness or something. I'd like to tackle whoever came up with the idea before I die of boredom.
Right,
said Ren, picturing a small army of young jocks in knee-length shorts snickering at naked sculptures.
Who painted this thing?
Said Luke, nodding at the Rembrandt.
You're kidding, right?
The look on his face, as blank as the day is long, told her he wasn't. She sighed.
It's a Rembrandt.
Luke unfolded a piece of paper and took a small pen from his shorts. He scanned the paper, but put the pen away without making a mark.
Oh, man, he said. Already have that one.
Bummer,
said Ren, immediately regretting her sarcasm. Luke had saved her at the airport.
Yeah, said Luke ruefully. Say, where's A-Dog at? Little twerp's not answering my messages.
His battery died,
she said, which was true enough. Luke nodded.
So where's he at?
Ren considered the question, and how much she should tell Luke.
Reading,
she said. That also seemed true enough. Luke looked at her carefully.
Does he know I'm ducking the question?
Most of the time she thought Luke was as dumb as a rock, but sometimes she wasn't so sure.
Like for his internship?
He said. The way he said it didn't ease her suspicions, but a moment later he was standing up and heading out of the room.
There are more of these Rembrandts 2 floors down.
Thanks, she said, taking one last look and standing up herself.
Tell my cuz to call me, okay?
Said Luke.
Laters.
Bye,
said Ren. But he was already gone. He had paintings to cross off his list. Ren checked her map.
2 floors down.
There was a level -2 in the Sainsbury wing, and it had temporary exhibits.
That must be it, she thought.
She reached the bottom of the stairs and found a guard.
Excuse me, she said. I'm looking for the Rembrandts.
Ah, right. The special exhibit, he said. Far corner, last room.
He pointed the way. She thanked him and walked on, a spring in her step for the first time in dog years. She walked directly to the far corner, last room. Looking straight ahead, she didn't notice that the guard from the stairs was following her. She entered the room like a summer breeze, light and warm. She looked around. She was the only one there. No people, and no Rembrandts. These paintings were much earlier and entirely too English. She checked her map. The glass door swung shut behind her.
Hello again,
she heard. The summer breeze turned to an arctic chill.
She'd been so careful, staying out of sight, blending in on the city's crowded sidewalks.
But in this museum, feeling better for just a moment, she'd let her guard down, and now she would pay for it. She looked up and saw the thug from the airport, Liam, the van man. Behind him, through the closed glass door, she saw the guard from the stairs taking up a post outside the room.
So stupid, she thought.
What do you want? She said, stalling for time as her hand found her pocket.
Nothing really,
said Liam, a wicked grin lifting his thick lips.
No fuss. Just come with us.
Us? Thought Ren.
How many of them are there?
She ripped her phone free as she turned and ran. There was nowhere to go, no other exit, but she put the room's one bench in between her and the towering thug.
As she shifted her weight from left to right, trying to guess which side he'd attack from, her shaking fingers fumbled across the screen. She managed to open her text messages. Liam had taken something from his pocket, too. A syringe. Horse tranquilizer. It had nearly killed a guard twice her size. Liam took two quick steps and lunged. He stabbed out with a syringe as she punched her finger at the edge of the screen. Send! No bars down here, but maybe it would still.
Ah!
She screamed as the point of the needle raked across her left arm, a long, deep scratch. But had any of the tranquilizer gotten in? She ran around the right of the bench as Liam ran around the left. He was still behind it as she shot back across the room toward the door.
Stop her!
He roared. The guard turned around in time to see Ren throwing her whole body, messenger bag first, into the door. The thick safety glass smacked him in the face, and she squeezed out the small gap as Liam thundered up behind her. The next room was empty, too, but she could see the exit at the far end. Desperate for escape, pulse pounding in her ears, she ran, two steps, three, and she was yanked back. The guard had recovered in time to grab the strap of her messenger bag. He reeled her in like a wriggling trout as the drop of tranquilizer began to take effect, and her vision began to blur. Chapter 17. Dark Discoveries. Alex was in a small basement reading room at the tail end of a search for one thick, out-of-print book. He opened Major British Archaeologist of the 19th Century and flipped to the index at the back. First things first, he thought. What made an archaeologist notorious in the 19th century? He knew the answer immediately. It was a touchy subject in the museum world. He flipped to the T's. Tomb raiding. Early on, he knew it had been a free-for-all, with European powers openly plundering Egyptian tombs. Even Napoleon had gotten into the act. But this book covered a time that included the first rules, too, the first laws and restrictions. He scanned down the long list of page numbers for tomb raiding. Clearly not everyone was following the rules. As he eyeballed the entries and wondered where to start, something occurred to him. Not even a thought yet, just an itch in his brain, a feeling that he was missing something. His mind flashed back to Highgate. The broken lid of the grave, the broken door of the crypt. Robbed, he thought. Raided. The thought took shape. Was he on the trail of the crypt owner or the Death Walker? He remembered his original goal, a bad British dude with a strong connection to Egypt. Sounded a lot like a notorious archaeologist to him. He flipped to the M's. There were dozens of entries for mummies, but only one for mummified. It took him to chapter 17, devoted entirely to one man. Discharged from the military for his habit of torturing prisoners, Captain Winfred Willoughby began a second career. He called himself a gentleman archaeologist, but was, by all accounts, a professional tomb raider. This, too, ended when he fled Egypt while awaiting trial for multiple counts of theft and the murder of a rival archaeologist and two young diggers. Yeah, thought Alex, that's a bad British dude, all right. He skipped down the page. Seeking to ensure his own immortality, Willoughby set aside a large sum in his will to have his body mummified. With no experienced practitioners available, however, the procedure was botched. According to contemporary accounts, the ceremonial washing was skipped, and while the other five steps were attempted, Alex ran through them in his head, removing the organs, drying the body with salts, packing it with more salts, sealing it with resin, and wrapping it all up. The hired help barely knew which end to hold the debraining hook by. Alex paused to turn the page, his head abuzz. A botched mummy, a mummy made by amateurs. He remembered the walker's ravaged voice and mottled skin. He read the last few lines. The mummification was such a scandal at the time that the cemetery where he was interred refused to list Willoughby's name on his crypt. A crude, early photo filled the rest of the page, blurry black and white. The subject looked smaller and less impressive than the figure they'd encountered at Highgate. His shoulders were slighter, his chest less broad. But the face and even the outfit left no doubt. No one broke into that mausoleum. Willoughby broke out. Alex snapped the book shut, and two names floated through his thunderstruck mind. That of his new enemy, and that of his best friend. I've got to tell Wren, he thought, as he took the stairs two at a time. He was eager to see the sun after his dark discoveries, and ready to make amends.